as well, just the quality and efficiency side. I think the best comment I've heard about this is the car, using the car analogy. If we're going to buy a car, we wouldn't expect it to turn up in the driveway and day one a chassis turns up and the guy drops it off and says, well, we'll be back tomorrow with the wheels, and then we'll be back tomorrow with the wiring, and we'll be back tomorrow with the, and on it goes. You'd just be probably thinking, what's going on? But we accept that for building, whereas a building can be the exact same as a car done in a factory and comes out virtually complete with minimum work on site. So that's the best sort of comparison as to quality. Because if your car was built in your driveway, the first thing you would, well, the two things you would think about is one's quality and the next is how long is it going to take. And there's so many unknowns with weather. It's the exact same with construction. So having a bit more certainty to quality and timescale makes a big difference.
And with coming back to the car analogy, is there a spectrum? Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining our next Proctor podcast, which is being recorded right here in our very own pod, up in Blairgowrie in beautiful Perthshire. We've got a lovely day for it and the sun is shining. Today we're going to be discussing Building the Future, insights from the modular construction industry, and we're very lucky to be joined by a very special guest, Alan Milne, who is the European Membership Director at the Modular Building Institute and the Director of the Modular Building Consultants Limited. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you, and it's great to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me up, and beautiful day, as you say,
in
beautiful Perthshire.
Looking forward to a good discussion today.
Yeah.
For those of you that haven't met Adam Salt before, he is our Head of Global Sales Modular Offsite.
Hello, everyone.
Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
So I thought it would be good if we could start with Alan, if you could kind of briefly give our listeners or viewers some background to yourself and your role at the MBI.
Great, yeah. I've been in this industry, I hate to say it, but 30 years now. So it seems, sometimes seems longer, sometimes it seems less. But yeah, 30 years, other than a 2-year hiatus to go and start up an architectural practice and run that. So yeah, long industry experience. I began working recently with the MBI, and the role there is to develop the European membership. MBI, predominantly non-for-profit organisation, based in the US, is now expanding into other parts of the world. Europe is the next stop, and as it's expanding out, I'm there to develop that part of the market for them. So yeah, lots of experience. I've worked in different sectors. I've worked in manufacturing, worked in sales and marketing, I've worked in the construction side. So I've crossed all of the different disciplines within the industry and thoroughly enjoyed it as well and on that journey.
Excellent. So a lot of knowledge to impart today. And Adam, do you want to just give anyone that hasn't come across you on our podcast before a little bit of background to yourself?
Yeah, so I've been at Proctor's for about 6 years, just gone 6 years now. Done a range of different roles, from starting off as a regional sales manager, then I went into business development at High Rise and Facades, and also then started looking at modular and offsite. Found a little bit of a niche in the industry, understanding some of the challenges that a lot of companies were coming against, and also finding solutions to those. So we did quite well in the modular offsite sector in the UK, and now in my new role, expanding that worldwide, globally. So I get to work with companies in Asia and Australia, America. So the joys of the job, really. Getting to travel.
I heard you were in Vegas recently, so you're...
We both were.
Well, this is funnily enough, this is the first time I've actually met on home soil. Every time we've passed each other at shows or various events, it's been outside of the UK, so it's actually good to be in the UK for a conversation.
Yeah, so a bit of clarity on that. We had the World of Modular in Las Vegas, and that's hosted by the Modular Building Institute. We got to go out and we had a stand this year. Last year it was in Orlando,
yeah.
Yeah, and we just walked the event, found it was very impressive. So this year we decided to get a stand and also got to talk as well.
Yeah. But it was a really good success. That it was, we had the most attendees of any previous MBI event, with 1,700 in total.
And so, were they mostly US attendees, or does this attract audiences?
Worldwide. With people from the Middle East, with people from Asia, people from Australia, New Zealand. Canada's always had a big presence, even with the political situation. There's still a lot of Canadians there. Europe, obviously, as well. South America. So a really good global presence there.
Excellent. And I guess that's representative of the kind of developing markets across the world. I mean, what are you seeing in terms of what's happening internationally with modular in the moment?
From my perspective, what we're seeing is an acceptance of modular construction as being a method of construction in countries where it maybe wasn't 5-10 years ago. And I'm thinking mainly of Asia, also the Middle East. These are growing markets, and they're realising the benefits and how they can adapt their existing construction industry. They've all got the same challenges, because they've all got housing shortages globally, labour shortages, costs, time. So all of the challenges that modular can meet are the same regardless of where it is in the world. So countries that maybe weren't thinking of modular previously are now looking at it and buying into it. On top of that, you've got the steady markets, which Europe, North America, they've been steady markets for a long time, but they continue to grow as well as the use of the product grows. So not only is it for commercial use, it's now moving into residential more, which maybe 10 years ago wasn't as in demand. So there's a big change in how it's moving in different sectors as well.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, with your kind of history with modular in the UK, do we see the UK as quite a developed market for modular, and other countries are kind of following suit, or has it been bigger somewhere else internationally historically?
I think in the UK we are really good with modular design, and I'd probably go as far as saying we're one of the best in the world, or one of the leading in the design stage. Where we have fallen short recently is some of the manufacturing and getting that right. We have a lot of challenges in the UK with transport. Our roads are very small, for example. So trying to get all that right has been our biggest challenges, whereas over in say Asia, that's the bit they've mastered quite well, is transporting modules all over the world, not just within their own countries, getting the manufacturing processes right, and the setup right. But we're getting the kind of design elements of that right, so I think working together with these other countries, we can hopefully come in line together.
Yeah, I think the UK is a good example of there are two sides to the UK market. You've got two particular sectors in the UK. You've got the commercial sector, and which I will call, modular companies may not like this, but I call it the grey box sector, because they build grey boxes, but they build them very, very well. They're well designed, well constructed, and because they're grey standardised boxes, they can build them consistently and they can build them for stock. Whereas the residential sector, and where we've seen bigger money coming into likes of LNG, Ilkcombs, unfortunately these companies have not survived, but what they were doing was building mainly for the residential sector. So the residential sector has got a lot more stop-start due to planning, so you cannot build for stock as easily, because you don't know what you're going to build until that planning is approved. Whereas the grey box for commercial, for schools, for offices, whatever it may be, they're standardised product. All you're doing is a fit out, so you can actually keep the modules going through production. So that's where there's two distinct, because all the bad press seems to go towards modulars. Another company went bust, X, Y, and Z's went bust.
Right.
But it's mainly the residential side. And it's not always the company, it's been the issues outside of the company that they can't control. Planning is one main one.
Yeah.
So that has to be sorted out, I think, for the market to move forward.
I was with a company yesterday and they just started a project, keeping everyone busy, the factory's busy, it's all happy there. But some of the team are worried about what happens after that project. There's a lot in the pipeline, but it's not looking like it's going to come anytime soon.
Yeah.
So they're going to have this period of nothing, and they need to keep the staff busy. And how do we do that? Could we work closer together as companies, sharing workloads? So when someone's busy, could another factory help that's quiet, for example?
Yeah.
Not sure, but I think we could certainly do a lot more in the UK from that aspect.
Yeah, and I think it's back to this one of the main tasks the MBI have been involved with and I'm involved with is this getting the collaboration within the industry. And as you say, Adam, getting people working together rather than working against each other and competing. we can compete commercially, but we can also work together commercially. Mm. And we start working as a bigger mass, then the industry's got bigger volume potential. Mm-hmm. If it works as individual companies that are too small, then the difficulty is when you do hit these issues, then you've got problems, and every company's got the same problem, but they may be in different timescale. So, as you said, where you might be able to have a gap in production where somebody's over or get too big an order book, then that order book can be passed across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that working together can really be of benefit. It's how you move that when you've got different product ranges, that's the difficulty.
Yeah.
And getting the mindset to change is also.
Because everyone wants to build the modular homes, but they are seeing the more constant orders with bathroom pods, MEPs, and doing modular systems for those for buildings as well.
Yeah.
But the desire is to build the full homes.
Yeah.
And it's just where that goes, but that could be a solution.
Yeah. I think the constant in the industry has been the commercial side. There's always been the demand for commercial, and that I think will stay consistent. It's the residential, which has been the growing market in the UK and globally, that is the one that's got the difficulty, and that is the one where you're hearing the stories of companies closing.
Mm.
Very, very rarely, or is very less likely to happen in a commercial modular organisation that are only doing commercial.
Mm.
And there's a lot of big companies, big, large, small companies as well, that are doing very, very well. They do great products, and they will continue to do that. Unfortunately, when you're looking at the residential side, you need to be prepared for a bigger and higher mass market.
Mm.
So you need to produce or have the factory capability to produce higher volume, which means more overhead, more startup costs, and then more overhead ongoing. So if you don't have that order or that gap in order, suddenly your overheads are still sitting there.
Yeah,
that's the difficult part.
Are any UK modular companies exporting during these periods where are they feeling a gap elsewhere, or do they not have the cost base to be able to do that?
The UK tends not to export. The UK market, I would say predominantly, is works within the UK only. There's very, very few companies that will export. If you ask me the reason why, I wouldn't know.
Yeah, that's just, what I'm wondering.
Yeah. We've had a lot of our partners tender on projects around the world, and they're up against other companies around the world on that. And they tend to lose out in the final stages, and it tends to be the Asian market picking up a lot of that export business.
Yeah.
So we've been involved in the tenders, but I've not seen us win any of them yet.
Yeah. So the cost, their cost base is too high to compete.
Yeah, I think so. Experience with shipping as well. I don't know how clued up we are as an industry doing that, so that could be something we could learn as well.
Because we are starting to see some international companies bringing modules into the UK. So I wonder what that says for the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I know that the association in the UK pushes against that, and quite rightly, they're protecting their market, the MPBA, Modular and Portable Building Association, and they do some great work for the industry in the UK. They are not as keen to get outside or overseas businesses in, which I understand. They're protecting their home market. You do occasionally get, again, it happens the same, Adam, the other way I've seen, where the tenders will come in, or people will tender from overseas, but it cost then becomes prohibitive the other way, and they can't win because of transport costs.
Mm.
But I think the point there about shipping is very important, because some of the manufacturers that we visit in Europe have developed the factory near the port, because predominantly they are building to export, whereas in the UK it's more inland, its export is not really on the agenda. So if they are exporting or are chasing work elsewhere, then there's a lot of cost involved to actually get it to port in the first instance, and then transport it from there.
Absolutely. So coming on to some of the challenges faced in modular construction, what's happening at the moment?
I think to kickstart it, I'd say a lot of companies moan about government funding, not getting enough support compared to maybe some more traditional projects. In full volumetric modular, they're struggling against 2D panelised systems. A lot of companies are seeing the benefit of 2D at the moment, which is still great for off-site manufacturing, but a lot of investment's being put into those, so that's timber frame or steel frame systems. So I think a lot of the modular companies in the UK feel there's a bit of a lack of funding I don't know if you would agree with that, Alan.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's the funding because of the overhead, as I mentioned earlier. Mm. In order that they need that pipeline, they need that constant order book.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest challenges, is keeping that stream of work coming in. I think that's probably one of the main ones. When you're looking at the product and taking that product to market, you've then got obviously building code and making sure legislation is met. Although modular doesn't really make any difference, whether it's modular construction or whether it's traditional construction, the only big change is how that building is, through the stages of construction, how it's checked for quality from building control. So it's not just site work only they're checking, they have to check two parts, one in the factory and one on site as well. So it's making sure that it's aligned more than altered as far as building codes go. I think the other important part and the other important challenge going forward is contracts. A lot of the contracts that are used in modular construction are predominantly GCT, NEC, FIDIC. I mean, these are all traditional construction contracts. What we are seeing is some development of these contracts towards modular, so that they're more aligned with the modular payment structures, for example. Mm. But I think the industry should really have its own contract, because a lot of these contracts need to get heavily amended in their current format to suit modular construction. Yeah. So that's a lot of time and a lot of cost, yeah. And that slows up the process as well.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's a contract more suited to modular, it's already in place. Yes, it can be amended, but it's a quicker amendment process than it currently is at the moment.
That's a really good point, because I've seen some contracts recently for modular where they're looking at including the storage time period within that contract.
Yeah.
So a lot of contracts didn't include that. So modules were made, put in a yard under the expectation of 3 months, they're gone. 6-12 months later, they're still in the yard.
Yeah.
So now there's contracts, I think, up to 6 months going, that needs to be additional cost, things will need to be replaced, and the damages that comes along with that.
Yeah, and I think payment structures are very important, because you've got two sides. Having worked with and still work with both client and with manufacturer, you've got two sides to that. The client doesn't want to be over risk at the beginning. The manufacturer needs a hefty deposit to get everything up and running and mobilise that construction. So there's a higher payment initially, which then leaves the client at risk.
Mm.
That then changes through the process as you get to the end, because the manufacturer is then waiting on final payment when they've put all their cost into the building and delivered it to site. And on top of that, you've got insurance to look at as well. Who insures the product?
Mm.
You can vest the product, so when each stage payment is given, there's an ownership of that product in the factory to the client.
Mm-hmm.
But it still has to be insured by the manufacturer. So there's lots of technicalities there that, you know, tailoring a contract to suit all of that process would make life an awful lot easier.
And is this something that the Modular Building Institute is supporting the industry with?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. It's one of the things that we've been looking at. It's one of the things from a European side that I've been looking at very closely, so that we can look to make sure that process, not just the contracts, but also the actual professional approach, because what we do find is where there is maybe a traditional construction background to a project, there is a traditional construction design team brought in for that project, and it's not really the same, it's not needed. All right. Okay. It's not really needed, because you don't need as many construction professionals. For example, above ground, you've already got a design product, pre-designed product. So you can take out some of the elements of that. There's still very key, important people, architects, structural engineers, etc. But the amount of input is slightly different and needs to be tailored to suit that as well. Because if it's the same time and effort and cost, the client isn't gaining anything at that part either.
Yeah.
So it's understanding the processes is very important. And this is something that we are doing a lot of education on as well with the MBI.
Alan, you touched there basically around the requirement for less people on site. So, I mean, do you see this as a big contributing factor towards, you know, some of the answers, some of the resolving even the skills shortage in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. I think on-site workforce is obviously less. A lot of that workforce gets taken into the factory. And the skills are different. They're more production skills rather than actual site traditional labour skills, which joiners, electricians, etc. Now these skills are still required for modular, but they're just required in a different way. So that production line, because it's more process driven and more processes, individual processes, which are then easily managed rather than leaving a tradesman to do the role, because there's no tradesman to do it on site, then this is one way that we can achieve the volume required, especially in housing, to get that number of people back into the workforce quickly. The other issue is that this is one side of the industry. And what's looked at a lot of times when they're looking at skill shortages is the actual labour to build. But the other big piece in the jigsaw is the actual labour to install. So if there's not enough people to install, then there's a problem. So I think one of the challenges of the industry is it needs to have specific training for installation teams. Now, there's a lot of good installation teams out there. Unfortunately, they're all getting to a certain age. So give it another 10, 15 years, they're going to be retiring. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of these people learned their skills not because there was a path, a recognised path for training. They were joiners, there were all sorts of different tradesmen that just got into modular, a lot of them by default, but learned skillfully how to install modules. So it's how we now develop that skill set and make it a trade to actually install the buildings as well. And this is not just a UK issue, this is a global issue. And I see it time and time again. I've seen it recently in Saudi, when they were looking at the volume pickup they need to develop their market. They looked at production, they looked at material, they looked at factory labour. Nobody actually looked at the actual on-site labour. And also transportation is another one. You've got all these modules, you've got thousands of modules getting manufactured. You've got to transport these modules from the factory to the site, then you've got to install them. So there's all sorts of supply chain challenges, but labour shortage is definitely one way, or traditional labour shortages, modular is one way that it can overcome those.
Excellent. And do you think that modular will encourage the younger generation, with it being more machinery, technology involved? So hopefully that, and also off-site, so you know, when it's raining and the weathers aren't so good, especially in the UK, people would rather work in a factory environment rather than outside.
Absolutely, and it can be multi-skilled learning as well, because you can learn to do one part of one part of a manufacturing process. But what the good factories are doing is they're training their workforce to be multi-skilled in different stations. Mm. There's also substations as well that are created for sort of wiring looms, for example, for electrics, plumbing. All these substation elements fit out. So there's lots of different skills within the factory. So it doesn't have to be such a mundane process of saying, right, I'm going to work in the modular industry and I'm going to just be fitting plasterboard, or I'm going to be just doing one role. They're getting multi-skill training, which is really good.
Wow.
Interesting. And I think generationally, I know this isn't a podcast about generations, but I was at something recently and it was all around kind of the attention span and the wants and needs of the next generation in the workforce. And I think one of the things that came up is multiple skill sets. It doesn't have to be pay increases all the time, multiple skill sets and doing different jobs. And it sounds like that's like something the modular industry potentially could offer people.
Yeah. In their careers. And I think I've seen it in the well-established UK modular manufacturers, they will look at that, and a lot of them have been doing it for many, many years, and they'll develop the workforce that way as well. And a lot of them have got good retention of workforce, because what they'll do is they'll develop them within the factory, given the multi-skill, but they'll also then look at them to go into the site work as well, or even into the actual technical side. So there's a lot of good training going on with these well-established, as I say, the grey boxes. It's not detrimental. It's because they're doing it, grey boxes, very, very well, very skillfully.
And when we're talking about challenges in modular, have you any specific examples of maybe some of your customers that have had, you know, challenges within the industry that they've overcome?
I think there's a lot. We touched on the funding earlier, working with a company called MMY US. So they were consultants in the UK under MMY Global, and then they set up their own facility in Louisville, Kentucky. With all their vast experience of being a modular consultant for many years, they've taken a lot of what they learned to apply that and actually do it in practice. And one of the main things I remember Robin telling me was that he was focused on the government side of projects, and that's because the payment plans were more structured and more efficient. Mm. Might not have been as much margin, but it was more efficient to make sure that his factory was always running. And now I think he's got a 2-year pipeline all booked in. It's done great development for the local area. So learning from that and making sure that we have those structured payments for the modular companies, I think is key going forward. So you've got that funding constantly coming in.
Yeah, definitely. And I think from both sides it works, because from a manufacturer, you've got a sense of guarantee, a sense of safety working with that government body. But from the government side, they've got that continuity and the manufacturer's going to be there, not worrying of whether that manufacturer will survive and whether they'll go bust after, you know, putting everything towards modular. Because that's the risk from the client side as well. It's not just, obviously we hear about the manufacturers who, you know, don't manage to continue trading, but it then does leave clients, government bodies, private sector body, whoever that client is, but it leaves them without a solution. And if that happens halfway through a project, it's a bigger issue. So having stability for the manufacturers is a key part of the industry developing and continuing to grow.
And I suppose also looking at the private sector, we could see companies partnering up. So a main contractor could partner up with a module offsite company. We've seen this in the past with, say, timber frame and house builders. We've seen even in modular, we've got Tide Construction and Vision Modular partnering up. Having that partnered approach per project means you should still have that good steady income of projects and payments.
Yeah, and I think if you are, you know, if you want to start a modular factory, that pipeline is the crucial part of your success. Now, what a lot of modular manufacturers, Tide's a good example, where they become the developer, so they can control that flow as well, whereas they're not just waiting on a customer coming to them, a developer coming to them, because there's no way of controlling who that, when that developer will come and how that planning process will go as well. Although you can influence the planning, you can't control it as well as you would if you were the actual developer or the owner of the site itself that was being developed.
So just going back to the factory stuff, we talked a little bit there about the upskilling of people within the factory environment and the benefits that gives to the workforce and staff retention. I think that's great. What about, can you talk us through a little bit, both of you, through, you know, the benefits of off-site construction itself in terms of quality control, efficiency?
Yeah, I mean, you're in a controlled environment, so you should be able to look at the processes and get them routined and structured, documented as well, which is quite important. A lot of the stuff that happens on a traditional built site, if you've, say, got 500 homes to build, there's loads of different processes going on at once that it's hard to see what's happening. In modular offsite, one of the great benefits is you can stand in one location and kind of see the whole production line, which is great for warranty providers wanting to do their inspections on the full system. But the main thing is that improves the quality of the install, because you're refining that process always, and it's becoming a lot more routine to the system design. And then also the product innovation can help with that as well, because you start to look at how it fits in with the line, and you're seeing lots of new and innovative products to tailor for the manufacturing process.
Yeah, I think as well, just the quality and efficiency side, I think the best comment I've heard about this is using the car analogy. You know, if we're going to buy a car, we wouldn't expect it to turn up in the driveway and day one a chassis turns up and the guy drops it off and says, well, we'll be back tomorrow with the wheels, and then we'll be back tomorrow with the wiring, and we'll be back tomorrow with the, you know, and on it goes. You'd just be probably thinking, what's going on? But we accept that for building, whereas, you know, a building can be the exact same as a car done in a factory, comes out virtually complete with minimum work on site. So that's the best sort of comparison as to quality. Because if your car was built in your driveway, the first thing you would, well, the two things you would think about is, one's quality, and the next is how long is it going to take? And there's so many unknowns with weather. It's the exact same with construction. So having a bit more certainty to quality and time scale makes a big difference.
And with coming back to the car analogy, is there a spectrum of quality across modular housing like there is with vehicles? I mean, I'm thinking of what I see as a quality car and what's maybe not quite a quality car. Do we have that big gap?
Absolutely, but that gap works. That gap works for many reasons, because if I'm speaking to a client and I've taken that initial brief from a client, that there is umpteen lots of manufacturers out there. Some are more, I wouldn't call it bottom end, but what they're doing is that they're targeting a specific market based on price normally. And then there's more upper end product. So there's a range of quality products across the board. The difficulty for clients is how do they know which is best? Because they will get umpteen costs back. If they, normally what a client will do, depending on their knowledge, but they'll probably go on the internet, they'll pick half a dozen companies, and then they'll get half a dozen costs after sitting through half a dozen meetings, and on it goes. And the costs will go from low cost to high cost and a few in between. The client has to then decide, where is the quality here? So the benefit is understanding what the differences are, and then saying, well, actually, based on your brief as a client, the, maybe the lower quality is better, because maybe you're just needing a product for a shorter timescale. Maybe it's not a permanent structure you're after. Maybe you've got an exit strategy in 10 years. So why do you want to buy something that's going to last 60? You may want to resell, but then you've got all the time and cost and everything else. So some clients will prefer a different baseline of quality. It doesn't mean to say it's not built better, it's just materials are slightly different. So it's, and that car is the same. You could buy, you know, the car range is maybe more extravagant and low to high than the modular building. That's more slightly condensed, but there is still differences in quality, and the choice of the consumer will decide which one they're going to choose. But the important thing is the consumer knows about cars, because we know the brand right away where that
exactly.
quality sits. In the modular industry, there is no such leveler. So it's very difficult for an end-using client to work out if they're getting value.
Exactly.
And if that value is different for each client, so they may find that the value maybe not lie in the highest quality. The value for that particular client may lie in the lower quality for a quick exit. So there's quite a range there. So it is very similar, and it's a good point. It's a good way of addressing that as well. I'll bring the car analogy into that one for the future as well.
You also don't just see it from company to company in the modular sector. Mm. Even within that modular company, they might have four or five product solutions. Here's your standard specification, ticks the box for what you need, but do you want improved air tightness? Here's our next range product. Do you want an improved U value?
Right.
Yeah, and so on. So you can upscale your own product within that one company.
Yeah.
And depending on your type of project, well, they might do that. Which is great when you see some of those companies that work on such a vast range of different projects, and then you've got another company that just has their niche. So it's great seeing the differences between
yeah,
them.
Definitely, yeah.
And the warranty providers, are the warranty providers the same as for traditional housing, for example?
Yeah,
it's the same.
Yeah, they are coming on board. What's it called? I can't remember.
NHBC.
Yeah, I was going to the coal board there for a minute. They are now moving into modular and modular specific. And that was one of the challenges for the industry in residential a number of years ago, because mortgage providers weren't keen in lending against modular.
Yeah.
The main reason is just didn't know how to risk it. They thought, is this a temporary? They're going back to, you know, prefabs, post-war prefabs. Is this a similar quality? They had no idea where the quality sat. So they were reluctant to look at long-term loans against these properties, not knowing how long they would last for. So the biggest change is having quality product that will be certified to last 60, 100 years now on the structure. So that gives confidence to the marketplace to give the warranty on these products as well, which is one of the reasons it's opened up the residential market in recent years.
I was at a BoPass event, and they spoke about, or some of the warranty providers were saying, the language the industry uses is quite important. That word prefab, for example, has been used to try and promote the modular industry, which just doesn't help. So
no.
The language is quite important that we're using to
yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting, because the different parts of the world, you know, prefab in some other parts of the world has got a sort of quality element to it.
Yeah.
Prefab in the UK is a bit of a no-no.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then you've now got industrial IBS, industrialised building systems, which is another one that's becoming more common as well. So, but modular is probably the more global terminology across the board, I think, and it's the most used.
Yeah, it's funny how terminologies can change. We do some prefabricated buildings in the agricultural sector, a subsidiary company that we have down south. And as soon as you start talking to a farmer about a modular building, which technically it is, they don't want to hear about it.
Is there any reason why?
I think they just think it's high tech. It's, I just need a big building kind of thing. And I think they find it slightly confusing. So I can't say, I'm not going to blanket all farmers or that, but we definitely have a couple. So really, to think it's more traditional than an agricultural prefab. So they're happy with that, because I think it's got a cost associated with it. They think it's probably
slightly different person.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because you're coming from another end of the market thinking that is better, or too good for it, whereas prefab's normally the opposite. Prefab's normally classed as the poor man's relation to a decent quality building, which is, I mean, when you think the prefabs were only ever meant to be a short-term solution post-war, and some of them are still getting used as homes today, so you can argue, was the quality better than it should have been? Who knows?
And what about the environmental impact? I mean, this is something that the whole construction sector is, you know, talking about, promoting sustainability, low energy, Scotland's well on its way to net zero. I mean, what's the environmental impact of the modular sector?
I think the industry in its whole is on board with trying to hit targets in line with the government recommendations of 2050 for England and 2040 for Scotland to be net zero. I mean, we ourselves at Proctors have hit our target of less 25% and are pushing on that for the future years. So I think everyone's aware of it, and construction is such a huge contributor to the CO2 emissions. And it's not necessarily sometimes the stuff that happens on the site, it's the whole manufacturing process of the materials that go, all that embodied carbon, and that's not being spoken about enough. So there's now a huge drive with embodied carbon for your modular system, but also all the products within that system. And we're seeing probably the rise of EPDs, environmental performance declarations, as the solution to understanding that. And that's probably going to be a benefit for modular, because it's really going to show the savings you're going to get on your embodied carbon over traditional built systems.
Yeah, I think it's proving the facts, isn't it? Because we all know within the industry that it's more beneficial. If you look at the energy efficiency through manufacturing, you've got less waste as well, because you're more precise with the product. If you're producing high volume, then through economy of scale, you can buy in product to the exact sizes that you require, rather than have lots of cut-offs of materials that you would have on site as well. So there's those savings come into play. Arguably, you could say it's because it's a precision-made product in a factory, you can achieve better air tightness, so you achieve better energy efficiency when the building's in use. And I think the other part of it that's coming into play now is this whole of life cycle costing. So looking at how that building performs over its whole of its life, and then what happens at the end of its prescribed time. Does it continue on? If it does, how much cost does it involve to refurbish it? Can it be recycled? How many parts can be recycled, etc.? So there's a lot of work being done in it. And I think it's been proven now there is manufacturers that will do passive housing. So that's an achievable target very easily with modular. So whether that becomes brought in quicker than it necessarily needs to be, I think it comes back to cost. I think the will's there to do it, the capabilities to do it, but it comes back to cost because it costs more. So unless it's forced, then the industry will maybe tend to follow, or the client follows, and then the industry follows.
Well, we're seeing a huge drive in Scotland towards passive house now on new builds, and achieving passive house on site is becoming proven and can be done on numerous projects. But I think it'll be a lot simpler in a factory environment, wrapping modules from the outside and shipping them. It's going to simplify that process. Yeah. So as we see an increase of passive house and low energy design, it's just going to fall more in favour of modular.
Yeah, I think it's going to be obviously it will become the norm as the targets come into play, as we get nearer those dates, but it will become the norm. But the good thing for modular, it's in a good position to take that up, take that challenge up.
It feels like there's quite a bit of technology being implemented into modular as well, in terms of ongoing monitoring. Is that something you're seeing a bit more of, in terms of monitoring the performance of the building longer term?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of smart technology getting brought in. We've got big players like Samsung involved in the marketplace now from manufacturing and using their technical capabilities. So that's definitely going to be part of that, not only for production processes, but also in the end user experience and smart homes.
It seems more so than in traditional new builds. That's unfair. Just to my experience, it looks to be that there seems to be more open to smart technologies with these kind of mass.
Yeah, I think it's back to what you were saying there, what Adam was saying earlier, because it's easier to look at that installation during the factory production, during that precision process. Whereas a lot of these technologies, if you're going to build them into the system, it's another trade on site. It's another trade that's come into that traditional build. Does it make it difficult? I would say it's easier in a factory.
I think there's more time because once the modules are produced, they're in storage. So they're sat there waiting, and you can do testing at that stage, which in traditional build, the production doesn't stop. You know, your bricks go on, your roof then goes on. There's no time to actually stop and do a bit of testing. And that kind of, or if there is, it's going to slow the project down. Whereas in modular, the modules are made, they're in storage, nothing's happening to them. It's the right time to go in and do an air tightness test. And there will then be the aspect of the movement onto site. You would probably want to retest when the project's finished, but doing it as early on, it's better to achieving those performances.
Yeah, definitely. And because you're doing those quality tests and even just that quality assurance testing at each modular station, if you like, then you can address that problem early on rather than waiting till you get to the finished product and then having to go back. So the snagging element becomes a lot quicker as well. There's less snagging, and it makes that whole handover process quicker once the building's in sight, ready for completion.
Sounds wonderful. Sounds too good to be true. And so, Alan, coming back to you, can you share a little bit about your personal experience? I mean, what really interests you about being involved in the modular construction industry?
That's a good, very good question, actually. I think for me originally, it was travel. And that started off, I mean, I was lucky enough to get a position with Portacarbon, one of the biggest companies in the UK. And I began discovering Scotland, and it was great in travel. It also took me to some fantastic facilities and places, ranging from prisons to submarine bases in Fars Lane to the RAF Lookers, not far from where we're sitting at the moment. And if you don't mind, I'll tell you a good story while I'm on Lookers, actually. It's one of the biggest regrets in this industry I have. I was doing a lot of work at Lookers, at RAF Lookers, and one of the projects was to build a shooting range where they use the electronic sort of shooting guns. So it's a quite a big building. It's a big empty modular building, and they fit it out with a blank screen at the back. So the screen has all these people popping up, and they've got these guns that they are laser guns, but they fire a canister, so as if it's a real gun. So anyway, that was the project. And I was doing some other buildings within aircraft hangars, and I was doing the aircraft hangars. I was in sort of doing the handover, and I was leaving the site, and I got to know quite a lot of the air commanders and people there. And the air commander said, what are you doing? Are you busy? I said, yeah, I've got to get back down the road. He says, we're having a little sortie with the cadets. Do you fancy coming up in the plane? I looked at him, I thought, no, I need to get back. I've got to go back. And I drove out the base and I drove my car and I thought, what have I just said? What have I just gave up? I should have taken it up. And I seen them all taken off. I thought, what am I doing? I didn't really have to go anywhere. I was just going back down the road. I thought, so one regret that I never said. I never said, come on.
You could have been waving.
I could have been away up there. And so travel and opportunity is probably the biggest bit of fun. I mean, in the last 10 years, that travel's expanded beyond the UK. So it's taken me to some wonderful places in the world as well. So, yeah.
I assume that's just going to continue now with the way it's going.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, very little work now. For me, is in the UK, and most of it's now overseas. So yeah, it's good. It's good from that point of view. So it's and it's the interesting clients you meet. It's the interesting projects. Not all the project. Every project's different in its own way, but the actual business sectors that you operate in are very different. So each one has got its own challenges, but that's what makes it interesting. It's not just the same thing all the time. So yeah, very good industry to work in.
Right, Adam, you're not skipping this question, over to you. What's exciting to you about working in the modular industry?
I think before I got into the industry, I only saw the big head presses of negativity, and I thought, not an industry I ever want to get involved in. Once I've been in the industry, I realised how unsupported the media are, because there's so many positive design innovations, projects, customers that just don't get any publicity. And it's just made me want to drive the industry forward, because there's some fantastic things being done in the modular industry that's just not getting any awareness. So I think that's what drove me to be in the industry and take it further and be a part of it. The other thing is, when you go to a lot of construction events, everyone's kind of all on their own. Whereas when you go to modular construction events, it's an industry that comes together. It's the networking is much better than any other industry I've been in. And a win for any modular company is a win for everyone. it's not a competitive industry. Mm. So I like that aspect of it.
Any particular modular event that you've been to that you like?
Difficult question. No. Stan, one of my favourites is obviously World of Modular. So they do one in America every year and one in Europe. And the way they run the events, encourage the networking, that the team from the Modular Building Institute are brilliant in terms of, I want to speak to those people, can you do an introduction? They will do. Which you don't really get at other events, so there's always people to help. The level of talks, the technical talks, especially there's one in Vegas that was brilliant this year.
I've actually heard really good feedback, and I heard that you guys behaved yourselves out there too. So we not did, you, yeah. Alan, obviously.
No, I didn't. But yeah, it was
It's really well run by the team, and it's great to see them growing year on year in size as well.
Speaking of that, I mean, what about not just the modular building industry events? Can you hear about those? What industry events? Like, what should we be missing in the next year or so?
Well, definitely the MBI, the Modular Building Institute's World of Modular is in Europe. That's coming up in October. That's the 6th to the 8th of October. Okay. So that's an event on a different scale to Las Vegas is. It's on a smaller scale, but it's very, very sort of specialised into modular, very specific in what it offers. We had the event in Brussels last year. We also opened the office in Brussels the same month for the European base because we felt Brussels was a good spot to have it. So we had the one last year, which was really good, well received. It's on a smaller scale, but in some ways we had a lot of positive feedback because of that size. Because what people were saying, it was easier to talk to people. They didn't miss any talks, is because a lot of different talks that go on at the same time. So in some ways, that smaller scales is as good, but in a different way as well. So we've got the Madrid one coming up. Next year, I think we're still going to get the date. It'll be April, but we've got the World of Modular again in Las Vegas. So we'll be returning there. Also in Asia, in Malaysia, we have got the International Construction Week. That's coming in, I think that starts, I think it's the 28th to the 30th of October. So that's a 3-day event, and it's, I think they have somewhere in the region of about 12,000 attendees. Within that show, there is, over the 3 days, there's one separate modular part as well, which is the first time they've did that. So that's going to be a really good opportunity to organise that event with them, and we're also being involved with looking at how we can develop the industry in that part of the world as well.
Excellent. So the future events are bright. Plenty going on.
Absolutely. A lot of good events coming up, and I think they'll continue to grow. I think there'll be a lot more events coming into the calendar that are specifically for modular, rather than, you know, a lot of these events in the past have been part of construction weeks only, and modular has been incorporated within them, whereas we're now seeing there's a lot in the UK, there's always been a lot in the UK, so these will continue to grow, I think, over time as well.
Excellent. Well, I'd just like to thank you both for your time today for our podcast. Really appreciate it, and thank you very much for coming up and talking to us, Alan. You've got a wealth of experience, and I hope you'll come back, because I could talk to you all day. I think it was really beneficial for ourselves and for our audience who are listening or watching.
Yeah, I thought it was great. Thank you very much for inviting me up, and I would look forward to coming back. I think we could probably talk on for a lot longer than we've got today. So yeah, that would be good. Thank you again.
Thank you.